If you'd like to follow along with me, I'll be reading from Esther 4. Verse 11 through 17. All the king's servants and the people of the king's province know that for any man or woman who comes to the king, to the inner court, who is not summoned, he has but one law, that he be put to death. Unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter, so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. They related Esther's words to Mordecai. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not imagine that you in the king's place can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this." Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens will also fast in the same way. And thus I will go into the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him.
The book of Esther has been a very impressive book in our studies, and I want to express my appreciation to those teachers who have been teaching the little ones as we've been talking from time to time about subjects that the little ones are studying about. I was impressed when I asked Caitlin, "Tell me all you know about Esther." And she began to tell me the story of Esther. Grand things that our little ones learn and remember about such Old Testament characters. When we talk about Esther, we know that she lived during the time of King Ahasuerus, who was known as Xerxes by the Greeks. We learn in the first chapter of the book of Esther that his empire was made up of 127 provinces, over which the Jews had been scattered as a result of the Babylonian captivity that God had told them was sure to come. His dominion extended from India to Ethiopia. Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, was reigning as the king of Persia, 486 to 465 B.C. Perhaps the thing that impresses us during his reign in secular history was the unsuccessful war that he waged against Greece, in which I understand about 2 million of his soldiers were taken into battle and only about 500 of them lived to tell the story. But this is the king that we're talking about. And we note that the story of Esther begins in the third year of King Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, because the text tells us in the first chapter that he arranged a great feast. This feast lasted 180 days, during which his guests came and they drank royal wine from golden cups, and it was a very festive occasion. When they had been served in great abundance and had drank at their own pleasures, we note that the women were being entertained by Vashti, the queen of this empire. Interestingly enough, as you'll begin the reading in verse 9, it says, "Also Vashti, the queen, made a feast for the women in the royal house, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine." And then we read concerning the names of his chamberlains. I'm not particularly going to attempt to pronounce all of those names. But what we do know is that the commandment to the chamberlains was to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king with the crown royal to show the peoples and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look upon. Now, there are several things so far involved in our understanding of this story as we read about this Old Testament character, Esther. One is, we learn in Esther chapter 4 that was read just a few moments in your hearing regarding Mordecai and his instructions unto Esther. The text tells us, then Mordecai bade them return answer unto Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then will relief and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house will perish, and who knoweth whether thou art not come to this kingdom for such a time as this. Mordecai, and we'll talk more about him in just a moment, gives instruction unto Esther regarding the place that she now has in the king's house. And again, we're going to talk more about her in just a little bit. But I want to observe at this point that Mordecai is confident in that which God has promised. And that's going to be the theme of the things that we want to talk about this evening. Mordecai understands the importance of the nation of Israel in reference to the promise that God had made unto Abraham. When God said unto Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed. We also note that that promise was repeated to Isaac. It was repeated to Jacob, and Mordecai was not ignorant of the things that God had promised. If indeed all nations were to be blessed through the seed of Abraham, if all of the Jews were annihilated, then how could that promise ever come to pass? Mordecai understands that relief of the Jews is going to come from somewhere, that God is going to provide, and Esther, how do you know that your place in world history has not been provided by God for this very occasion? Now, with that theme in mind, we want to be reminded of some things before we talk about Vashti. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 1, the wisdom writer said, for all this I laid to my heart, even to explore all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. That helps us to understand that it is God who is in control. In the third chapter and in verse 11, the writer said, man cannot find out the work that God hath done from the beginning even to the end. You don't know everything that God has done. You don't know everything that God will do. And neither did Mordecai, but he did know that God would keep his promise. And once again, that becomes the theme of the things that we want to talk about. In Deuteronomy 29, we might ask questions that we don't know the answer to. The text tells us the secret things belong unto Jehovah our God, but the things that are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. There are things God just simply hasn't told us. And Mordecai, he didn't understand all of the revelation or all of the things that God might do to preserve his people and bring about that which he had revealed unto Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. But he did know that God would do what he said. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and in verse 7, Paul said that we walk by faith, not by sight. Trust in Jehovah with all thy heart and lean not upon thy own understanding in all thy ways. Acknowledge him and he will direct thy paths, the wisdom writer tells us in Proverbs chapter 3. I want to suggest to you that that's precisely what Mordecai is doing. Now this king, as we've noted, reigned during the Persian Empire about 586, and we've talked about that. We learn that he offered this royal feast that lasted 180 days. We've learned that Queen Vashti was sent for to parade herself before these drunken guests. Now, there are those who would say that in Vashti's refusal to follow the instructions of the king, in verse 12 it says, but the Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by the chamberlains, therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. Some say that Queen Vashti just simply disobeyed her husband, and that's why she was in trouble. Others say that Vashti refused to come because she did not intend to parade her beauty before a group of drunken guests. But we're not going to talk about the possibilities, one or the other at this point, but simply to observe that she wouldn't come. In verse 13 it tells us, then the king said to the wise men who knew the times, for so was the king's manner toward all that knew law. and judgment. And then we read about the chamberlains. And they say, what shall we do unto Queen Vashti? Well, why? It says, according to the law, because she hath not done the bidding of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains. And then we note, their fear is in verse 17. For this deed of the queen will come abroad unto all women to make their husbands contemptible in their eyes. And when it shall be reported, the king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti, the queen, to be brought in before him, but she came not. And this day will the princesses of Persia and Media, who have heard of the deed of the queen, say the like unto all the king's princes. So will there arise much contempt and wrath. In verse 19, the text tells us, if it please the king, let there go forth a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. Well, Vashti is dethroned. We're going to appoint a new queen. The process, according to verse 15 of chapter 2 through verse 20, took quite a long time. Esther is eventually the one that is selected. In verse 10, it tells us, and Esther had not made known her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not make it known. And Mordecai walked every day before the court at the women's house to know how Esther did and what would become of her. Mordecai was a very important character. Again, we'll talk about him in just a little bit. But it's needful now to have a new king. Those not chosen to be the queen of King Ahasuerus were made the king's concubines. Now let's talk about Mordecai. In chapter 2, beginning in verse 5, we learn of Mordecai. We learn of his heritage. We learn that he had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives. In verse 7, it tells us that he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. And the maiden was fair and beautiful. And when her father or mother were dead, Mordecai took her for his own daughter. Now, I'm not sure, frankly, whether Mordecai was her uncle, some suppose that so, or whether Mordecai was her cousin. But the point we want to underscore here is what he did for Esther. She didn't have a father and mother. They had perished, and so consequently Mordecai took her in and raised her. We learn that there was a plot that was revealed to Queen Esther about the assassination that was to be attempted on the king. In fact, in chapter 2, in verses 19 through the several following verses, we see the revelation of that plot. Another thing that's interesting, in the third chapter of the book of Esther, this fellow named Haman, who was somewhat the right-hand man for King Ahasuerus, he wanted those who would come before him to bow down and to worship him. And Mordecai would not do so. He would not pay homage to Haman. Well, Haman was upset by that. And so consequently, Haman devised a plot to kill all the Jews. Now again, I want to underscore in your mind why that's so important. In Esther chapter 3, reading beginning in verse 6, the text tells us, and he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had made known to him the people of Mordecai. Therefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. And we know that there was a time appointed when this was to be carried out. Mordecai once again expresses his faith in God. He knows what God has promised. He knows that if all the Jews perish, then the promise cannot come to pass. He knows that God is going to provide deliverance for the people of God, for the Jews. In verse 14, The text tells us, "For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then will relief and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house will perish, and who knoweth whether thou art not come to the kingdom for such a time as this." Well, Haman, in devising this plot to kill the Jews, persuades the king to sign a decree that on this certain date, the assassination of all of the Jews is going to take place. An interesting thing here is that when the king signed the decree, it could not be changed. It was set in stone. Now, in order for Esther to fulfill that which Mordecai asked of her, there are some steps that she takes, and I want us to notice those. But before we do, I want to call your attention once again to the reading a few moments ago. When Mordecai says in verse 14 that God will provide deliverance, and that perhaps God has raised you to this place so that you can provide provision, or rather deliverance, for the people of God. In verse 15, "Then Esther bade them return, answer unto Mordecai, Go gather thyself unto all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, or 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast in like manner, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." Now that's a grand disposition, isn't it? She has the opportunity to make request of the king, but there's a law that if you go before the king and the king hasn't sent for you, that he may or may not bow his scepter to you. And if he does not, then you will be killed. Esther was not an exception to that rule. Mordecai tells her that the plan is to kill all the Jews, and you're one of the Jews. You'll not survive either. Her attitude is, either way, I'm going to perish. But if the king grants me to approach him, then there's the possibility that the people of God would be spared. Now, in this, we see her commitment to try to spare the people of God. Now, when she makes this plan to have a feast, King Ahasuerus comes before her, or rather she comes before the king, and the king extends the scepter to her so that she can come before him and speak. You'll see that in verse 2 of chapter 5. But in verse 3 it tells us, "Then said the king unto her, What wilt thou, Queen Esther? And what is thy request? It shall be given thee to half of the kingdom." I want you to notice that again in verse 6, where the question is asked, "What is thy petition? It shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be performed." You see it again in chapter 7 in verse 2. "What is thy position, or petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? Even to half the kingdom it shall be performed." The queen has the opportunity to come before the king. Three times he has said, "I'll give you as much as half of the kingdom." Esther has a choice to make. She can either receive half the kingdom from King Ahasuerus, or she can make petition of the king on behalf of the Jews. Now, what would you do? You see, Esther's character is revealed at this point. She plans a special banquet in verse 4, and she sets the day for the banquet to take place. In verse 4, Esther said, "If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day into the banquet that I have prepared for him." Well, the king and Haman make preparation to go. We notice in verse 9 through verse 14 that Haman is more than pleased to accept this invitation. In verse 9 it says, "Then went Haman forth that day, joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself and went home, and he sent and fetched his friends and Zeresh his wife. And Haman recounted unto them the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow also I am invited by her to gather with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai, the Jew, sitting at the king's gate. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made, 50 cubits high, and in the morning speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. Two things I want us to observe just here is Haman's pride. Haman is very pleased to go in with the king to the queen's banquet. And note, if you will, that Haman not only points out all of his riches and the great things that have been bestowed upon him because he has been promoted to the position of second in command of all the kingdom, but he's the only one that gets invited to this feast with the king. The only one. And he boasts about that. Now I want us to pause just here and talk about boasting or bragging. Haman's bragging is one of the things that was wrong. Haman's plot and plan involved who he was and how that those such as Mordecai were to bow down and pay homage to him. And when Mordecai wouldn't do it, it incensed Haman. He was instructed by those who were near and dear to him, including his wife, to build a gallows and hang Mordecai. Now that's an interesting plot, isn't it? And so the king had set forth how that Haman was to carry this out in chapter 6 in verse 4. It says, and the king said, who is in the court? Now let's pause just there. In the fourth chapter, the king didn't sleep very well that night. And because he didn't sleep very well, he ordered that the chronicles of the kings be brought in so that they could be read to him. You ever have a hard time sleeping and you get a book to read? Hopefully to help you sleep better or go to sleep. And so the king ordered that the chronicles be brought in and that they be read before the king. Now, Mordecai was an important character in times gone by, and his noble deeds had not been recognized. We know in the preceding chapters, in chapter 1, that Mordecai had known of this plot, and he had revealed this plot, and those who were to assassinate the king had been eliminated or killed. And so the king, as he reads about these things, he raises the question in verse 3, what honor and dignity hath been bestowed on Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there's nothing done for him, not a thing. He hasn't been rewarded in any way. And then the king said, who is in the court? And they say, Haman's there. And so the king orders that Haman be brought in. And the question then is asked of Haman. What shall be done, verse 6, unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman said in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? Now he's planning his own reward, isn't he? Of all people that the king would want to honor, surely it would be me. And so Haman said in verse 7, for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and on the head of which a royal crown is set. And let the apparel and the horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man therewith whom the king delighteth to honor, and cause him to ride on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Now Haman just sees himself, doesn't he? In all the king's attire, on the king's horse, being paraded around town. And the proclamation made, this is what the king does for men that he wants to honor. And then in verse 10, then the king said unto Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai. The Jew that sitteth at the king's gate, let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. Can you imagine the humiliation now of Haman, having to do this for Mordecai, to honor one that he literally despises? In the sixth chapter, as the text continues, it says in verse 13, and Haman recounted unto Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men, and Zeresh his wife unto him, if Mordecai, before whom thou hast begun to fall, be of the seed of the Jews, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. While they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains, and hasted to bring Haman unto the banquet that Esther had prepared. Now, Haman's wife says very simply, you can't win over this. If he's a Jew, you can't win. Now she prepares the banquet. In chapter 7, once again, the king tells Esther, Esther, what is your petition? It will be granted unto half the kingdom. You'll see that there in verse 2 of chapter 7. Esther begins to make known what she knows about Haman. In verse 3, the text says, then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my peace, although the adversary could not have compensated for the king's damage. Then spake the king Ahasuerus, and said unto Esther the queen, who is he, and where is he, that does presume in his heart to do this? And Esther said, an adversary and an enemy, even this wicked Haman. Now, Haman's getting in trouble, isn't he? Haman thought that through the plot that he had devised, not only would Mordecai die, but all of the Jews would be exterminated. And now we see that Haman's neck, literally, is in danger. It says, then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen. For he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king, and the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine. And Haman was fallen upon the couch where Esther was. Then said the king, will he even force the queen before me in the house? And the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then said Abona, one of the chamberlains that were before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman made or hath made for Mordecai, who spake good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. And the king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Now that's interesting. Haman had prepared this gallows for Mordecai to die, and now Haman is the one who is hanged on his own gallows. Well, Mordecai, in chapter 8, is promoted. It tells us in verse 1, on that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews, enemy unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spake again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman, the Agagite. and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out to Esther the golden scepter. So Esther arose and stood before the king, and she said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews that are in the king's provinces." Well, now she asked that the king reverse his order. That can't be done. And the king tells her, that can't be done. But what can be done? The king sends out a new decree. In verse 8 it says, "Write ye also to the Jews as it pleaseth you in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring. For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring may no man reverse." Then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, which is the month Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews and to the satraps and the governors and princes and the provinces which are from India unto Ethiopia, 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto the people after their languages, and to the Jews according to the writings, and according to their languages. Now let's pause right there. What's this decree all about? Well, it's written to everybody throughout all the provinces. And you'll notice in the text that it was sent on the swift steeds, the fastest horses that the king had. And this decree was sent. In verse 11, "Wherein the king granted the Jews that were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy and to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, their little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey." Now what are we learning? The king said, defend yourselves. You see, this was to occur on a certain day. And the king knows when this is to occur. And he tells the Jews, this is what's going to happen. But now I'm writing a decree giving you permission to defend yourselves. Well, that meant a whole lot, did it not? Because the Jews, in defending themselves, delivered themselves from those who were charged to kill them. Now, the thing that I find interesting about that is that not only did they deliver themselves, but vengeance was taken upon Haman. His 10 sons were hung from the same gallows that Haman was hung from. You'll see that in chapter 9 in verse 13. You'll note also that initially they killed 500 people. But that's not all. When you drop down to verse 16, the Jews were very victorious. In fact, they killed 75,000 people. They were delivered. They were delivered. It then became a day of joy. There was a feast day that was appointed, was to be observed every year in observance of this deliverance. Mordecai, you'll note, in the context of chapter 10, was exalted and had the opportunity to be, as it were, the king's second in command. Now, that's a very brief synopsis of the book of Esther. But you know, for a book where God's name is not given, it's a very interesting book. You can see God on every page. Esther was an orphan. What if somebody else had raised her? But Mordecai did. And Mordecai, no doubt, taught her some things about who she was. Taught her some things about the things that God had promised. What if she had been in the home of other relatives? She may not have known the things that Mordecai has taught her. What if Esther had revealed her identity to King Ahasuerus before the appointed time, before Mordecai instructed her to do that? Well, it would have offset the whole thing, wouldn't it? But what if Mordecai was not a man of wisdom and intelligence? What if Mordecai didn't learn of the plan of those to take the king's life? What if he had not reported that to the king? You say, how is it that Mordecai even came to be alive at this place in history? What if the king had not had trouble sleeping that night? He would not have known of the great thing that Mordecai did for him. The chronicles would not have been read in his hearing. How did the king happen to hear about Mordecai saving his life? He couldn't sleep. He read it in the chronicles. How did it happen that until now the good deed of Mordecai had been overlooked? What if he had been rewarded immediately? Interesting questions, aren't they? What if this young Jewish orphan had not become the queen of this world empire? What if Vashti had obeyed the king in all that he ordered? You see, there are a lot of what-if questions that tweak the whole thing. Now, though God's name is not mentioned in the book of Esther, one of the things that we do see is God on every page. We see God working through His providence to save His people. In Esther chapter 4, in verses 13 and 14, the text tells us, "Then will relief and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place." How did Mordecai reason that? He knew what God had said to Abraham. He knew that there was to be a lineage established, and that through this lineage there would be a deliverer. And if all the Jews were assassinated, there would not ultimately be a deliverer from the guilt of sin. Mordecai raises the question about Esther. "And who knoweth whether thou art not come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" You don't know, Esther. It might be through the providence of God that you have this place and position in history so that you can provide for the deliverance of these people. Now let's notice one more time in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 1. The wisdom writer said, "For all this I laid to my heart, even to explore all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God." Was that true in this time period of history that we read about in the book of Esther? Yeah, that was in the hand of God. Now, I don't know everything about the providence of God, and neither do you. But what we do know is that God's providence is exercised. It was here, in the case of this period of history, of this Old Testament character, Esther, Mordecai, Ahasuerus, and Haman. You've listened patiently to our study. I hope that something beneficial is in the lesson to help you see that God takes care of His people. He provides for the fulfillment of His promise in every way. And maybe you're in the audience this evening and you're not a Christian. You need to obey the gospel. God, before time began, prepared a way whereby you might be saved. As the Apostle Peter preached it in Acts chapter 2, he spoke concerning the crucifixion of Jesus, and he said that this was according to the foreknowledge of God. It was His eternal plan. It was not an accident. God had made preparation for the salvation of you and me. In the sending of Jesus, in the death of Jesus, in the resurrection, we see who He is. We see a sufficient sacrifice to take away sin, provide atonement for those things that you and I have done. You believe that that's so. Turn from your sin in repentance. Confess your faith and be baptized into Christ. That's the plan of God to save you, because salvation is found in Christ. But the plan of God doesn't stop there. Once one enjoys the salvation that is in Christ, what if he sins again, such as Simon in Acts chapter 8? Simon was told to repent, and Simon called upon Peter to pray for him, that none of the things that he had spoken of might come upon him. John tells us, 1 John chapter 1, that if we confess our sin, He's faithful and righteous to forgive us. You see, the blood of Christ will forgive you too. If you be subject to the invitation, we can help you anyway. Your obedience to the Lord. Please make that known. Come into the front as we stand and sing this song.